Grade 1 Conference, Lecture 9, The Four Temperaments, Part 5. Let's see how we meet these four temperaments when they manifest in children. And I just want to emphasize again that, of course, I am going to be presenting you children as though they are acting purely out of one or another temperament. Your work is by first of all looking at their morphology, looking at their general, you know, physical makeup, the way they walk, be it the remarkably heavy walk of the melancholic, given the child is fairly thin and light, the buoyant, almost floating walk of the phlegmatic, who will be later on perhaps a very good ballroom dancer, the on-your-toes sort of ballerina-like walk of the sanguine, and the more dig-in-your-heels, very strong and sturdy walk of the choleric. You know, that alone will give you an insight into the child's true temperament. And we have to expect, yes, there will be admixtures. There, in our time, it's very hard for anything of a soul, spirit, nature, especially when it's trying to directly penetrate the physical body, it's hard for that to work its way in and not get all mixed up with things. You may recall Goethe's fairy tale, The Green Snake and the Beautiful Lily, and the statues of the kings made of different metals, and the one that is a mixture of all of the metals, who at the story's end collapses. We can't sustain that mixture. It's really good for children, at least in the classroom, if they are feeling that one temperament is being called upon, and that is the one that they are beginning to transform. When a child finds his or her temperament, this is the first step, however dim and dreamy, in self-knowledge. And so we really want to help make this happen. All right, so the melancholic. What is he going to be like in the classroom? Quiet, usually not part of a group of gigglers, note passers, even though the first graders, not reading very much, aren't passing too many notes around, but will generally be something of a loner, will like to talk to you perhaps more than his classmates, melancholics feeling this quality of age prematurely, often gravitate towards adults. We might even say another reason for the growth of percentage in melancholics in the modern Waldorf classroom is the growth in the number of only children who are surrounded always by people considerably older than they are. So they wake up a little bit more. The mode of discourse is going to be more adult, and there might not be as much play in that child's life, or the give and take, the boarding room, the boarding house reach that's needed when you've got siblings older and younger than you. So there it is. The melancholic is the quiet one. As I mentioned in the previous lecture, something of a hypochondriac, often truly getting ill, but always feeling on the verge of something. You know, she will complain more about headaches or stomach aches. You may see the so-called school illness, where a child does not want to separate from the mother, where that umbilical cord connection is still very strong. And melancholics perhaps have more of a tendency to this than others, who simply doesn't want to go to school. And this isn't always an easy thing to work with. Where should the mother be? And are you going to just indulge this or be very strong about it. This is something where the help of a school doctor would really be great if such a thing occurs. The melancholic also has, of all of the children in the class, at least initially for a good part of first grade, the strongest memory. The most developed memory capacities are there in the melancholic child. So they're going to be very good, for example, at the review time of the story. We'll be talking about that in future lectures. And they will also remember the form of the day, the little rituals you have. You know, if you forget to light the candle, or if you sing before you say the verse instead of saying the verse before you sing, the melancholic will be quite distressed about this and will, you know, bring it to your attention. If you mention casually to the children that on Friday you're all going for a walk, you might say this on Tuesday, very likely on Friday, very few children will recall that you said that, especially if you forget to bring it up. The melancholic will. And this can be disconcerting for teachers to have sort of that personal assistant not always asked for in their midst. And the melancholic loves school. School is for them heaven because, number one, there's the ongoing voice of an adult in main lesson, another adult in Spanish, yet another adult in this or that class. So they really like most of their classes. Physical education, games, may be the only area of school where the melancholic is a little bit reluctant to get too involved. In later years, woodwork can be difficult for them as well, because in a way they've exhausted their energy, sculpting their bones and carving those out and don't have much left over for carving other things, but nonetheless, very, very necessary for them. So how are you going to meet this child? And this for us as Americans in particular, and it's not quite as strong for those of you from international, taking this conference from an international location. Let me just speak to the American teachers for a moment. You know, America is a very sanguine nation. It's part of our national character. We smile at each other when we pass someone we know. You ask somebody, how are you? And they really, really have to be in a bad way if they're not going to say, I'm fine, I'm okay. The melancholic will tell you how they are, even if it's unasked, unbidden. And they will register, you know, anything that they're unhappy with in the classroom or any contradiction you've made or lack of clarity and directions. They're there like your conscience, and not always with a big smile by any means. And this can be a little irksome for us American teachers. So what I'm going to give you as advice holds for all of the temperaments this summer and through the year and probably through the 3 years of the primary grades. Become all four temperaments. You know, become for, let's say, a few minutes a day, or maybe you want to focus on it for a week, a melancholic, an hour a day. Try to eat like a melancholic, breathe like a melancholic, walk like a melancholic, and listen to sorrowful music, read a very sad fairy tale, or at least a fairy tale with long, sad segments to it, sorrowful poetry. Enjoy it. Live in it. And the more, in a way, you have to struggle to do that, probably the more you're striving to experience melancholia for yourself, the more beneficial that will be for the melancholic child. If they feel you are trying to be where they are. So Steiner's general advice is don't try to cheer up a melancholic, but rather show them that you too have a melancholic side, that you can also understand the suffering of the world. You know, they'll come in and they'll tell you that their parents were arguing, perhaps, or mother may be very ill. Some of this is exaggerated. Sometimes they have all kinds of anxieties and apprehensions about their parents because they always have a feeling which is not vouchsafed to the other temperaments until third grade or so. They have this feeling for the presence of death, for the presence of things that are destructive in the world. And you want them to know that you are there with them, you know, and that we're going to be hearing a story about something like that, or you may even have to now and then carefully and cautiously write a story which is really pedagogical, as we say. We'll be speaking of that in greater detail later on for the melancholic child to hear and to experience, or a, you know, a poem or a song or something like that. You want to do this for all four temperaments, but I would say that the melancholic, whatever you do in this regard, he or she will take this in most deeply. You know, your work with the melancholic child is never lost. It really, there'll be many dividends, because that child is going to go on to become very likely one of the, you know, pillars of your class from an intellectual, academic, perhaps artistic side as well. So you really want that child to be working with you. Now, I mentioned that melancholics tend to be absent quite a bit, and in the winter in particular, where flu may be going around or something like that, it's not unlikely that they're going to catch it and be out for a while. And you may be concerned, well, you know, do they start to fall behind? Does that frustrate them? And actually, melancholics, remarkably, by the end of the year, if you give them the opportunity, maybe even sometimes sending something home with them, they will make up for lost work. You know, even if it's form drawings and you just set some time aside to go over the form drawing with that child a couple of times, they will apply themselves. You know, they don't want to fall behind. They're not lazy. They sometimes don't have a whole lot of stamina, but they will give it their all, you know, as long as their strength holds up. And that's a very positive thing, that you want the other children to see that as well. You know, that Joanne really worked very hard. She was, you know, she missed 5 days of school the last couple of weeks, and look what she's done. And she's really worked very hard at making it very, very beautiful. And just one other aspect of the melancholic, that, as I said, they love dark colors, particularly black and purple. Very likely, when you receive your Stockmar crayons at the end of the summer, when you get your school supplies, you will find that there is not a black crayon in there, because Rudolf Steiner, we are told, said no black for the young child. Well, that's actually not true, and I'm going to, you know, actually read a Steiner quote to you later on in this conference about that. I would say that the melancholic child can work with black. In fact, all of the children can. But the melancholic, if I can go this far, must have the opportunity to work with black and to learn how to control black and to learn how to balance it with the whole range of colors. But that side of darkness, black crayon, and I would dare say even a little bit of black paint, not necessarily black by itself, but a tiny amount of black added to blue or to red to just darken it a little bit, to adjust its color value slightly so that the melancholic can really feel this work of art that I'm doing is a reflection of myself. So, you know, here we've touched on some pretty intense things, especially concerning color. And, of course, I do not ever want you to do anything that runs contrary to your school tradition, at least not without a lot of discussion with your colleagues about what you're going to try. And it may very well be that your mentor is going to tell you, no, we just don't do that. And, you know, you're going to have to make some judgments yourself. You'll find in this conference and in the others in the upper grades, I will be bringing some things that are a bit contrarian here or there. But I will always let you know that in advance and always emphasize that if you feel this is the right way to go, you want to do it with clear permission from your colleagues. Okay, we'll look next at meeting the phlegmatic child.